Coming to you from various places around the world, this is the Global Exhibitor Podcast, the podcast designed to help exhibitors succeed internationally.
Have, I think, every color of beach sand on that one island. So you can see a red sand beach, and that's because of the minerals that are in the beaches. Yeah. You can see a black sand beach, which is actually quite cool because it's volcanic rock that's decomposed. It feels really soft and you sink really far down into the sand. I don't know, it was very strange. So see red sand, black sand, and white sand beach all on this small island.
Wow. Sounds cool.
It's very cool.
Your host for the Global Exhibitor Podcast is Jeff Hanna, a designer, entrepreneur, business strategist, industry thought leader, and student of world cultures based in the United States. Here's your host, Jeff Hanna.
So thank you all for joining us for this mini-series with David Hanger, who's considered a critic of food. He's also a very seasoned international traveler. His reviews on TripAdvisor have been read by over 100,000 people, so he's helped lots of people find the right place to eat. I believe this is going to be really helpful for you if you're in marketing or you're an event planner or an exhibit manager. You're planning client dinners, you're planning team meals, things like that in various countries around the world. This can be really helpful. So I've asked David to narrow it down to five of his favorite cities. And then within each of those cities, what are his top restaurant picks? And also, what are some of the activities that he recommends people do in those cities? So this is going to be a lot of fun as we take this journey with David Hanger around the world. So in this session, we will be exploring the Greek island of Santorini and the city of Shanghai in China.
Okay, well, let's go to the third country.
Okay, so the next one is Santorini in Greece, so the island of Santorini. And I went there on a cruise with my wife, and we were there for less than 24 hours. So we kind of were coming in with the mindset of let's do as much as we can. And honestly, you can do this. You can do the island in a day, but I recommend you take about 4 to 5 days to do it.
Okay.
And the reason I say that is the island has maybe two or three main, I'll call them towns. They would call them cities, but they're not what you would consider a city. There's Phira. That's the main one. That's where most people come in, and you can actually get to the top of Phira, and it's sitting on a mountaintop, right? So to get there, you can either go by camel up this path, which is not necessarily recommended, or you can take the lift, which is faster, less smelly, more enjoyable, better
maybe
views.
Less dangerous.
Less dangerous.
less adventuresome, though, I guess.
Yeah, mostly less smelly. But So Phira sits at the top, and it's, if you Google Santorini, Phira is the city that has the white buildings, the blue tops, round domes on top of the buildings. That's what you're going to see of Santorini. And so very, very beautiful. But the rest of the island can be much flatter. What I would recommend is you rent a four-wheeled buggy, and not an open roof buggy, but one with a roof.
Yeah.
Because the traffic can be fairly dangerous there. Almost like maybe in India or some other places in the world where there are no rules.
Where you take your life in your own hands.
Exactly.
Behind the wheel.
Drive at your own risk.
Yeah.
And so, but having a buggy and a little bit of protection around you is a good thing. So, you can do the island in one day. We did it, and you can see just about everything you want to see. But the reason I said 4 to 5 days is when you see those places, you think, I wish I was staying a little longer. Mm-hmm. So, a couple things that I recommend people do is, the first is go see the beaches. Because they have, I think, every color of beach sand on that one island. So you can see a red sand beach, and that's because of the minerals that are in the beaches.
Yeah.
You can see a black sand beach, which is actually quite cool because it's volcanic rock that's decomposed. It feels really soft and you sink really far down into the sand. I don't know, it was very strange. So see red sand, black sand, and white sand beach all on this small island.
Wow, sounds cool.
It's very cool. And the black sand beach is actually 3 or 4 miles long. And so you can stand on one end and look and see the entire beach in one view. And with this gorgeous mountain in the background, or it's a large hill. And then they've got restaurants and shops all along the coastline. So you can sit on the beach, go get some fish, come back and sit by the water. It's really nice.
Is there particular restaurants you're recommending?
Yeah. So two places that I recommend. One would be just anywhere along that black sand beach. Okay. Just because it's so beautiful, the waves crashing, you just fall asleep right away when you hit the cabana. And they have such fresh seafood there. So I would say anywhere along there is going to be a good bet. And the second place I would go is a place called Amudi Bay. And Amudi Bay is known for...
Is that like with an A at the front of it? Amudi?
It's A-M-O-U-D-I.
Okay.
And Amudi Bay is known for its seafood, but also its clear blue water. And so I would go to Amudi Bay, and they have maybe 3 to 5 seafood restaurants there. And again, same thing. They're all delicious and fantastic. And it'll be one of the most gorgeous settings that you'll ever have for eating seafood, I think, on the water.
Wow.
And one of the things also to do in Amudi Bay, probably before you have your dinner, is there is a, and this is what a lot of locals do, is there is a cliff that you can jump off of, but you have to swim to it. And
are you going to tell me you did that?
I definitely did that. So you have to take a hike around this cape, and the hike itself is no easy feat because there are actually a couple points where you're walking across boards that were maybe no bigger than 2 2x4s, right, in width. So 4 inches, I guess. Maybe that's a little bit of an exaggeration, 8 inches, but very narrow. And if you fall off, you're falling 15, 20 feet into the water. So you're, you know, jumping off a little bit into a cliff that way too, but most people can avoid that. But you come around this cape and you see the, it's like a small, almost like a small island. And it used to be where ships would dock is off of that island. And then they would take smaller boats into, like paddle boats into Amudi Bay. So they actually have, you can see as you're climbing up the cliff. So you have to swim out there to get to this small island. And there are a bunch of people queuing up to climb up to the top of the cliff to jump off. And as you're going up, you can see kind of where, you know, boats would have docked at the time, you know, back whenever they did that. And when you get to the top, you look out and it's a gorgeous view. You can see Ia, which is above Amudi Bay. So that's another small town or city.
Yeah.
And then you can also see Fira off to your right, which is the main city. And when you look down, the water is so clear, you can see all the way to the bottom. And actually, they have this massive chain, almost looks like an anchor chain, that is strapped from that island, almost to prevent erosion or something. And it goes all the way down to the base of that the sea floor. And so when you get to the top, it's kind of funny because the person at the top is instructing the person, the next person to go, and then they jump off. But the instruction is always, okay, when you jump, jump a little bit to the right so you don't hit the massive chain in the water. And so you're always thinking about that when you're jumping.
How far is this above the water?
It's probably a 20 or 25 foot jump into the water. And so when you hit the water, you're going maybe 15 feet down, maybe not that much, 10 to 15 feet into the water, and then you swim back up.
But scary. Feet first, I guess.
Feet first.
Unless you're a professional
diver. I think I was not. I definitely had shoes on, so I would recommend wearing shoes or some kind of a water shoe or sandal when you jump in, because at that height, when the water is not moving, it actually can hit you pretty hard.
Yeah.
And so... you definitely want to wear some protective gear.
This is only for the most adventurous listeners.
Yeah, and you know, if you're a little bit older, you can do it. You just might be sore in the morning. So,
I suppose.
Yeah, the seafood helps with that. You know, seafood and a coffee afterwards.
There you go.
Yeah. So those are my 2 recommendations for Santorini.
fourth city.
Sounds good. I'll start this one by saying ni hao.
Ni hao ma.
Ni hao ma. Sen hao.
Shi shi ni.
So my fourth city is Shanghai. And I would say this is, without a doubt, one of my favorite cities in the world. I think the energy there, the commerce, the fact that 20-some years ago it was fields, and now it's one of the largest cities in the world, if not the largest, is absolutely incredible.
It really is transforming.
It is.
Day by day.
Yeah, and if I think other cities around the world look to Shanghai as a model city for how to create such an incredible, vast environment, really.
Yeah.
And so in Shanghai, I have three locations. And the first one we just stumbled upon by happenstance, and it's called the House of Roosevelt. And it's right on, if your listeners are familiar with the two sides of Shanghai. So you have Puxi, which is more of the older side of Shanghai, and then you have Pudong, which is all the high, tall buildings that people think of and relate to when they think of Shanghai. So the old part, typically you'll see like a very British architecture, and on the new side, very modern glass, very tall buildings.
Yeah.
Some of the tallest in the world. Yep.
Yeah.
And so this place is on the Puxi side. So it's on the Bund. So you're going to go there if you're in Shanghai. You can't avoid it. And this is, there's a sky bar, sky deck at the top of the House of Roosevelt. So the House of Roosevelt is actually multiple stories, and it's a restaurant. But at the top is a sky deck rooftop bar where you just get wonderful views down the Bund and see the river as well. So you can watch the boats go by and you look over to Pudong. So I would go there at night because you can watch the light shows and all the buildings and watch the people walk down on the Bund. So that's number one. And then if you are adventurous, and I don't even know if this was legal for us to do, but we wandered around to the other levels in the House of Roosevelt, and we found there was an incredible library in there. Nobody was in there, but I would say you can explore and go find that. But then there was also this huge dining room that actually had two pictures of both of the Roosevelt presidents. And so if you're looking to get a picture of you know, the two Roosevelts while you're in China with yourself, a nice selfie, that would be the place to do it. It's just
quite an unusual find, I would say.
It is. It's a, you walk in there and you're like, why is this in Shanghai?
Yeah.
But so it's good for selfies in that way. So,
okay.
My second place would be a place called the Captain Bar.
Okay.
Also on the Bund, and also on the Puxi side. And this is at the top of a hostel. And so it's kind of difficult to find, and I don't even remember the name of the hostel where this is, but it's off a side street, and you have to take an elevator, very small elevator, right? 3-4 people can fit in. You take it to the top.
The kind I really hate to get in, and but, that I've been stuck in before.
Oh, well then you might have to take the stairs up to Captain Bar. But you take the elevator all the way up, and then you take another small set of stairs to get to Captain Bar.
Okay.
And the Captain Bar, when you walk in, you're kind of transformed to what I would equate to like the Pirates of the Caribbean. If I were to, you know, if I were to put myself in that movie, I would imagine a bar in that movie would look like this.
Okay.
But they have a fantastic menu of cocktails, and they also have an outdoor space, so you can also see great views of the city, which to me, if you're in Shanghai, you gotta find rooftop bars, because the city at night is one of the most majestic and inspiring in the world. So
you wanna see the lights.
You want to. And and you don't have that everywhere, like in Europe or in the US, in South America, but Asian culture is, they love lights, and it's good for people visiting to see that too. So.
Yeah. I just happened to notice a few minutes ago they were doing the light show over on
Marina Bay Sands.
Marina Bay Sands, yes.
Yeah, every night. So.
Yeah, so we are looking out now. It is dark, and we're looking out over the skyline of Singapore, which is lit up with a huge variety of colors and high-rise buildings, and hard to describe over podcasts, but really is something to behold.
Yeah. You got to be here to see it.
Yeah.
And really take it all in.
So what other activities do you have for us in Shanghai?
Okay, so there is a Confucian temple in Shanghai, and not a lot of people know about it, but when I was there, my dad also was there at the same time, and he's a big traveler, and he's a big reason why I am the way I am with food and with travel. So he was with some of his coworkers, and they were native to Shanghai, and so they took us to this Confucian temple. And the temple itself is very neat, and you really need to go with a local or a tour guide to really get all the facts and the history of it. But we were there actually for a tea service. So you can walk into the temple and kind of go to the back area, and they have tea rooms set up. And these hostesses will take you through an entire tea service, and the teas are just incredible. And you end up buying one, of course, because they're so delicious, and you can't make it like they can make it there at home, but you try.
Yeah.
And but the thing that I appreciated about it was the knowledge of the people that are serving the tea and their appreciation for that art as well, because it is art as much as it is science, and how you pour and when you pour and how long you steep and what you're steeping it with all matters. And so that's kind of a combination of really great experience with good food or drink in a Confucian temple. So yeah, it's a neat spot.
With a little bit of science.
With a little bit of science, yeah. The other thing I would recommend is, without a doubt, you have to do the Shanghai Tower. It's the tallest building in Shanghai. It's great for groups, but it's 360-degree view of Shanghai. And try to go there on a clear day, because you can see for miles. But I also challenge you to try to look a direction without seeing a high-rise.
Yeah.
And you can't.
Probably won't.
You can't. No. That's one of the incredible things about Shanghai, is just how many tall buildings are there.
Yeah.
And that's very similar to Hong Kong, but Shanghai, it's very prevalent, because you can actually go to a very tall building. In Hong Kong, it's more difficult, because the tallest one is commercial. So it's not as easy as in Shanghai. But the last thing I would say is, there is a famous hotel on the Bund called the Fairmont Peace Hotel. I don't know if you've heard of it, but...
Not sure.
Okay. You can ask people there, they'll know where it is, but it's has a green pyramid almost on top of the hotel, so that's how you can find it on the Bund. But inside of the hotel is a very famous jazz club called the Jazz Bar. And it's not big. It's quite small, and so you have to get there. I think you can make reservations, and you should try it if you want to go listen to jazz. Because if you go and try to do first come, first serve, it can be very difficult to get in. But the jazz there is magnificent, and it's just a fun place to go in one of the most famous hotels in Shanghai. So yeah. I'd also recommend
Sounds
that.
Like fun. Sounds like a neat place.
It is.
So thank you, David. This has been a great discussion about the Greek island of Santorini and Shanghai and China. Stay tuned for the next episode, where we're going to be talking about Prague in the Czech Republic, as well as Chicago and Santa Barbara.
We like to remind people that all business is conducted within the context of culture. So each episode provides insights to help marketers understand the cultures they're trying to reach, and strategies for building bridges across cultural divides. If you like the Global Exhibitor podcast, please share it with others, subscribe to it, and rate it on iTunes. We greatly appreciate the feedback. Please also check out our website and blog at www.globalexhibitor.com. And finally, if you or someone you know would make an interesting guest on this podcast, please let us know by sending an email to guest@globalexhibitor.com. And until next time, thank you for listening.